Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves. I'm just fucking with you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show where two best friends with arguably terrible mental health analyze movies instead of themselves, because everyone loves a distraction when you're feeling bad, right?
Yeah.
And this is that distraction. I have to ask, Ben, that was uncomfortable. You start every show, you've started with the same sentence.
For over 2 years now.
It was the monotony of it that scared me. It was the equivalent of like a sort of professional porn star.
Yep.
If they did a porncast.
Nice.
Podcast.
Nice.
But given that this is a thinly veiled mental health check-in, mate, where we just chat movies instead of how we're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
How are you actually doing? You know, how is this film relevant to you this week?
Oh, fucking
how
hell, man.
How you doing? How you feeling?
Right, I've had a long few weeks, if I'm honest with you. I don't really feel like I've got enough R&R. I'm in this weird cycle right now where I'm constantly feeling guilty for not being productive or not doing anything or not doing enough. Where, like,
and it makes you so guilty that you don't do anything.
That I get locked into a weird little guilt cycle, which is just doom scrolling and staring at the fucking ceiling instead of sleeping. And then every waking minute, I'm exhausted and I'm constantly like, I need to be doing everything all the time, right now, immediately.
Yeah.
And how that relates, how this film is related to that this week, is it's shown me that even the creme de la creme, professors, PhDs, scientists, top fucking field researchers can be laid back about stuff. They can be in the shittiest position of their careers, of their lives. They have no clue which way anything's going to go. And they're like, you know what?
That's fair.
We're going to be good.
That's fair.
And it just...
I disagree violently, but it's fair. It's fair. I mean, I'd say the Ghostbusters are fuckboys who strike it lucky, but we'll get into that.
Yeah,
we'll
Spengler, the famous fuckboy.
Spengler's the one. I feel like Spengler is the exploited genius surrounded by fuckboys.
I hate how this is started already.
I feel like this is The Social Network, but Venkman is Zuckerberg.
Wow. Wow. That's upsetting.
I'll come back to it. Because I've got a grand theory.
Oh, fucking can't wait for that one. Yeah, let's just shit on Ben's childhood again, shall we?
This is what the post show is about.
How are you this week, man?
I'm spiraling, man. I'm spiraling into new addictions.
Good or bad?
Ambivalent, right? Mm. So I put on weight quite easy. Right?
Okay,
I've never been big, but it's because before I get big, I nip it in the bud,
right?
But I had a couple of weeks off work, you know, so I wasn't on my feet, I wasn't burning the calories I was burning, and then I decided to sort of dovetail into that with a new little bedtime routine where I get some sweet Thai chili rice crackers, a whole pack, that to bed with me,
right?
Whole pack.
Yeah.
Tesco brand Miss Molly's chocolate bar.
Yeah.
A whole bar.
Yeah, no, I know.
And a cherry yogurt, full, you know, 600-700 ml yogurt.
So just to be
clear. I take all that to bed with me.
Yeah.
And I just snack.
Yeah.
Just eat until I sleep.
Just to be clear though, you did say new addictions though, right?
Yeah, this is my new bedtime routine. I don't feel like it's time to go to bed. Yeah.
That you've been doing for about 2 years, because we've had this exact conversation about the Thai sweet chili crackers, because I used to do the same thing. We've had this conversation pre-prodding, and I can tell you what episode it was for. It was for Die Hard.
Yeah.
Think about how long ago that was.
You make a good point.
That was then.
I think back then though, it was like post come down. It was like I needed
that. Oh, I got you. Yeah.
4 days. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Whereas now I don't have any of that. I'm just eating the food.
Now it's pre-come down.
Yeah.
Because you're always pre-come down.
Right. Yeah. Who's the lad in The Queen's Gambit with King Shark? Harry Melling.
Oh, yeah.
I look like an overweight Harry Melling. I've just got the short eye distance, the beady eyes, but just a gut.
The beady eyes of a shrew that only needs one swimming goggle when he goes swimming.
Honestly, mate, the delta in eye distance on that show was fucking insane. You could fit his eyes between hers.
Yeah.
They could kiss with eyes open and not make eye contact.
Don't say that!
What are we doing this week, Ben, for those that haven't read the title before clicking?
Today, buddy, we are starting my Ghostbuster series. Long, long time listeners of the show are going to remember or, you know, will know that the show has covered the three Ghostbusters movies in the past. We did Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, and Afterlife. But this was before the show had taken its full form with you involved.
Right, yeah, it's before I was co-host. Yeah. So
those episodes are long deleted.
I didn't listen to them because they were like 4 hours long and I have a
way
life.
Way too long. So way too long. And what I want to do, but is because I love you so much, I wanted to bring something to the table where I'm like, I feel like this is where our Venn diagrams touch tips. You know what I mean?
Totally.
This is where the sci-fi, the drama, the comedy, and the 80s sort of B-movie-esque feel. It's not a B-movie by a long shot, but it has that feeling of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's that does. Like raw, it's scrappy upstart.
Scrappy
vibe.
Upstart. That's the best fucking way to describe it. And I feel like there's something in here for both of us.
There definitely is. And it, do you know what? It's an honor to finally have you touch me the way you touched your ex.
But essentially, what I want to do is I want to have a series on the Ghostbusters to investigate what happens from the original all the way through to Frozen Empire. And I want to ask the all important question. Like, I want to find out from you. After watching all of the sequels, and after we've been through the full timeline of everything that happens, we do the behind the scenes, we find out the stories behind each one, we find out everything that there is to know about Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Will the original be a better film for you? And can we get to the bottom of why the original Ghostbusters from 1984 is still a pillar?
1984?
1984.
I thought it was 2016.
Wait.
We watched Ghostbusters, right?
Get in the fucking bin, mate. Get in the bin. Off your fuck.
Ghostbusters 2016.
Fuck off, mate.
With Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon.
We're going to be doing that one.
What?
Oh, we're going to be doing that one because you suggested it. Yeah, I said, let's leave it out. But no, you were
week,
like, no.
We're doing it this week.
Fuck off, mate.
So what film was I supposed to have watched?
You're an idiot. 1984, right?
Yes.
We're going to get to, we're going to answer an all-important question of why is the original Ghostbusters from 1984 still a pillar of pop culture 4 decades after its release? That's what
100%.
That's what I really want to get into the nitty-gritty
of. It really
of.
Is. It really is. And surprisingly so, because this franchise has taken hit after hit. It's like, it's not Terminator levels yet, but you know how they keep trying to dig up Terminator and be like, look, we fixed it, and then no you didn't,
no,
and they're just, like, no, it's got Christian Bale in it now, it's going to be great, and it's not
just let it die.
Okay, well, we've done a sequel to Terminator 3. Why it's all right, we've got James Cameron back, it's going to be great. It wasn't, though, was it?
No, just shut up, just let us fucking just let it die, man. Just let the thumbs up into the melting metal be the end,
yeah,
and then let's just leave it there, because that was great. So, Ghostbusters 1984, not 2016, you cunt. 1984, an ambitious gamble on this quaint little sci-fi comedy film, which no one saw coming because of its huge practical effects, huge competition, because obviously 1984, great year for movies, and this still came out to be Columbia Pictures' highest ever grossing film. I've put in brackets, you have to adjust for inflation. But after you've adjusted for inflation, yes, the highest fucking performing film for Columbia Pictures ever.
You say 1984 is a great year for movies, but just for the benefit of the listener, I've got a list here.
Yeah.
If you went to the cinema in 1984, you could have walked through the doors of the cinema and watched Beverly Hills Cop, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Gremlins, Karate Kid, Police Academy, Footloose, Splash, Purple Rain,
Friday the 13th, Part 4,
The Killing Fields, Dune, Conan the Destroyer, Nightmare on Elm Street, Children of the Corn, Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension,
what a fucking
Stop
film.
Making Sense by Talking Heads, Spinal Tap, or Once Upon a Time in America.
Yeah, there's shitloads of them, mate. There is absolutely shitloads of them.
There's like 3 classic films out every month.
Yeah, dude, the Woman in Red is from 1984. Gene Wilder, that's incredible. You know what I mean?
Great film.
Incredible. The fucking, Repo Man. Incredible. Cheech and Chong, mate. Incredible.
This is a comfort film for you, right? Ghostbusters is like a big comfort film for you.
Dude, Ghostbusters for me is, I mean, this is like a life-changing movie. Life-changing movie right. for me. So a lot of my childhood was sort of spent escaping into films or, you know, TV shows.
Ghostbusters was the yogurt from the spiciness of life, right?
It was fucking incredible. And I honestly, I wanted to share it with you because of how important it is to me and how important to me you are. I figured you guys should meet.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Likewise, babe. Thanks. Likewise, babe.
But yeah, so Ghostbusters fucking helps me through life. There's always something in it. So if I'm ever feeling blue, if I'm having a sick day, if I'm ever, I don't know, like struggling to sleep, Ghostbusters on, I remember it from having a VHS that was recorded from TV with the adverts in and everything. It's just a warm, cozy place to be. There is always a lesson in it for me. Doesn't matter what I'm going through, there's something there.
So for the benefit of those of you who haven't seen Ghostbusters 1984, or perhaps have seen it but haven't rewatched it recently and just want a quick refresher on what it's about so you know what the fuck we're talking about, we're about to break down the movie. We're about to break the movie down. This will include heavy foreshadowing. So this is your foreshadowing warning. We're about to foreshadow the film. If for some reason you haven't seen it and it's still on your watch list, pause it. We'll still be here. Go watch the movie and come back.
But then immediately come back because we do want the attention. That's the only reason we do this. Feed us the attention. Right, I haven't read this breakdown. You've written this one. Am I okay to start it?
Yeah, please.
Sweet. Three eccentric scientists, Dr. Venkman, Dr. Stantz, and Dr. Egon Spengler, are fired from their university positions due to having zero regard for the scientific method, student well-being, or any measurable targets or goals. You're such
a
dick.
Mean, Venkman is literally, when we're introduced to the character of Peter Venkman, he is trying to crack on with the student.
Yeah.
By electrocuting the other student into believing that he's a failure, and then gaslighting the female student into thinking that she's got psychic powers.
Yes.
Right.
You're saying this like it's all a problem, right? But all I'm hearing is charming Dr. Venkman. You know what I mean?
Okay. As ghostly incidents in New York rise in both frequency and severity, they decide to start a ghost-catching business in New York City called Ghostbusters, remortgaging houses and piling on huge amounts of debt from the private sector in order to convert an old firehouse into their headquarters.
Yeah.
Develop advanced technology, including proton packs and ghost traps, to capture ghosts.
They hire a fourth Ghostbuster by the name of Winston Zeddemore and a sassy receptionist. Janine Melnitz to help with the workload. Both receive next to no training and even less compensation. Although Janine does get to enjoy free sexual tension with Egon and his collection of fungus, molds, and spores.
Business booms as they capture various ghosts around the city, gaining media attention and public recognition. Meanwhile, Dana Barrett, a cellist, experiences strange occurrences in her apartment, including the appearance of a demonic dog-like creature. Never one to miss a trick, Venkman slides right on into her DMs, beginning an incessant campaign of quasi-stalking and innuendo.
Hey man, he's just there to help.
He's just a silly little guy,
it's
you know?
He's just a goof. Investigating Dana's apartment, the Ghostbusters discover a gateway to another dimension and learn that an ancient Sumerian god named Gozer plans to enter the human world and destroy it. Gozer's arrival is heralded by a massive increase in paranormal activity across the city, leading to chaos.
The Ghostbusters confront Gozer at the top of a skyscraper, but their proton packs have little effect on the entity. Gozer asks them to choose the form of their destructor.
Yeah.
And unable to stop the thought entering his mind, Raymond Stantz picks the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. Using their knowledge of science, the Ghostbusters manage to defeat Gozer and Stay Puffed by crossing the proton streams of their packs, closing the portal, and saving the city.
Yeah. Saving the day.
Yeah. It's light, it's fun, it's family friendly, and it leads me to one question. Ben, why are you so terrified of death?
I'm not really. I think my main problem is that it's so attractive. I think that's been a problem for a little while.
Okay. Because it seems to me this is a comfort film for you, right?
It is.
It seems to me like this is a great film for sort of de-escalating the threat of death to a child, you know? It's like you turn into a silly goof and you run around hotels and you eat free hot dogs.
Right.
And, you know, the Ghostbusters might come along and make a wisecrack as they pop you in a trap.
So,
and
that's almost like on the fucking nose. So when I was a kid, the reason that this, that this like resonated with me so well is it was a few scrappy underdogs up against a behemoth monster that was terrorizing their local environment, like their world. And they band together, they team up, they overpower it, they overcome this problem, and they save their own fucking world whilst making a bunch of people happy at the same time.
Yeah.
And they do it all with smiles on their faces, having a laugh and a giggle. Do you know what I mean? And that as a kid, when there was a lot of like fucking, I think when I was a kid, my dad was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So like the idea of being a Ghostbuster, being able to just shoot that cunt in the face would have been amazing.
That's pretty good. It is pretty good. Yeah.
Growing up though, man, the lesson of like the scrappy underdogs, having fun, but with one goal in mind and stopping at nothing to make it happen, is just nothing but fucking inspirational. It's a weirdly, weirdly resounding lesson.
I can see this as your blue terry towel blanket. So in the film The Producers by Mel Brooks, Gene Wilder's character has got a little blankie that he rubs on his face when things get stressful.
Yeah.
Because it reminds him of being in the... And I can see why this film as a child, like you said, it's that comforting fiction of the bad things can be fixed, but they can be fixed in a fun way with friends and all this kind of stuff. And it's not really scary. There's no real peril. Mm-hmm. And any peril there is, you can kind of fix by just, I don't know, having a go.
Yeah.
I can see why that's really comforting to a child, but then the comfort that that provided you in your childhood means that anytime things are stressful as an adult, it's like, I'm gonna just pop this on.
I'm just gonna pop this on.
Just into the player.
I'm just gonna have a go.
Just really quietly.
Just gonna have a go. Just, you know what I mean?
Just put it on. I'm just asleep now.
Yeah. Ironically, this is my go to sleep film. If I'm struggling to sleep, which is all the fucking time. So, I mean.
Yeah.
What? This film has to be on at least once a month.
Jesus Christ.
It's never watched all the way through at the, when I'm trying to fall asleep. There's times where I'm like, you know what I could really fucking go for?
Gozer. Only Zool.
Yeah, fuck yeah, man. There is only Zool. And I'm fucking all up for it, man. But then most of the time I'm trying to fall asleep, so this will just go on.
Okay, so let me define how I feel about Ghostbusters, because it's very different, right? I think it's a really good film. Mm-hmm. And it was a film I had on VHS as a kid.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of my go-tos. Okay. And it wasn't one of my go-tos for a really simple reason.
Okay.
That we didn't have the original VHS. We had it taped off the telly.
Same.
It was missing the first few minutes, and I think it was the second one on the tape.
Right.
So no matter when you put the tape in, it was never at the start of Ghostbusters.
Right, you always
either have to fast forward or rewind. And I think the films it was on with were like not kid films.
Right.
They were really boring drama, like, oh, fucking
hell. So your films?
Now, yeah, probably because I got into that. I was like, I wanted to watch Ghostbusters and just ended up like watching Full Metal Jacket. Just like, oh, what's this about?
Fair.
Like,
fair. That would probably fucking set me up for a weird life too. You know what I mean?
Right. So like, I enjoy Ghostbusters. It's great. Mm-hmm. I don't have the nostalgia for it as a kid.
Okay.
It was one of those things where like older kids really liked it because it was contemporary to their childhood.
Right.
And I was kind of more into Batman Returns.
Okay.
I think Batman Returns would be my comfort film. Maybe my equivalent.
I can get behind that. I can see exactly why that would be your comfort film, actually.
Right. Michelle Pfeiffer in a latex suit. Yeah. That will put me to sleep.
That's you down to a T. This explains you as an adult. What an eye-opening moment we've just had. This is lovely. Right, so to start this series off, we're going to be doing this one. We're going to be doing all of the sequels. What I want to find out from you is, why do you think the Ghostbusters 1984, why do you think it broke the fucking world?
Okay, yeah, they did. And I think that's an interesting question, but I think my answer to it is going to be really unemotive and it's going to be unsatisfying for you, but it doesn't make it any less true, fucker.
Okay.
Right? I think this broke the world because George Lucas had proven the worth of merchandising like 2 years before. You know the famous story that he was one of the first film directors, for the benefit of the listener, he's one of the first film directors to negotiate merchandising rights for his movie because he kind of knew that there was going to be toys and t-shirts, but no one really knew how just how big of a success that was going to be.
Got you.
But we did now.
Yeah, right? Yeah, of course.
And it sounds cynical, but like I mean it with a lot of love that the word franchise is something that we kind of apply retroactively to Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Because when we were growing up, it wasn't a franchise. It was Ghostbusters and its sequel on the other VHS right after Raiders of the Lost Ark. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
There was no interactive MMORPG. There was no novels. It was, you'd have to pick up your plastic Ecto-1 and imagine some more Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And it was fucking great. Yeah, it was incredible to be able to do so. I think the Legendary Monsterverse is an example of just films games we had as kids.
Because so
I had a plastic
good.
Godzilla and I had a monkey key ring and I was just like, oh, that's King Kong.
Yeah.
And I was smashing them together. And like, I'd imagine a Legendary Monsterverse picture for an hour or two and then I'd get bored and move on. And that was enough and that was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't need to physically see it on a screen. I think Ghostbusters was one of those movies. Everything that you felt about it as a kid, it's just these lads, so they're just... You could just smash any toy into the Ghostbusters.
Do you want to know?
We did a YouTube video about exactly
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we did. We did. Go watch it. Go watch it right now because it's mint. So it's really interesting that you bring up George Lucas, actually.
Why?
Because the special effects department for Ghostbusters.
Was it ILM?
It was not. The practical effects department for Ghostbusters was made for Ghostbusters.
Right.
Because there was no special effects house at the time that could pick up the project and do what they needed to do in the time that they had to do it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So Richard Edlund, who worked on Star Wars with George Lucas for ILM.
I was going to say the name's familiar.
Yeah.
Nice.
He worked for ILM. He broke off and made Boss Studios, who were devoted to doing nothing but Ghostbusters.
Oh, sick.
For a year.
Jesus.
But this is why the little crossover... See what I mean about the Venn diagrams, touching tips. You bring up Star Wars, I've prepped for Star Wars. We're fucking on it, mate. We're on it. So it was set up specifically for Ghostbusters, right? When it was set up, it was an empty warehouse with a couple of desks in it, and there was two animators, and that was it.
Jesus Christ.
And they bring in an animatronics guy, and they're like, right, this is your test. This is your audition.
Right.
We start filming in 2 weeks. Bring a fully working animatronic zombie taxi driver to New York City in 2 weeks.
Right.
And the job's yours.
You say zombie taxi driver to New York City and I'm just, the Robert De Niro jokes are just, I'm not going to make them. I just want you to know I'm holding it back,
I think that's the joke in the film, buddy.
Shut up.
But so they had that, then they employed a sculptor, then they started getting more animators in and it just sort of blew up from there, right? But Boss Studios was for this. It took on a few other projects after, but it was set up specifically for Ghostbusters.
Can you imagine your audition to any job being make a zombie taxi driver?
Yeah, it'd be mint. I'd be on it immediately.
I'd know I'd found home.
Yeah, exactly.
If that was the interview process.
Yes. The interview is 2 weeks long. Make me a zombie taxi driver that can blink his eyes and move his head. Yeah, fuck yeah. Give me a battery and a potato and a fucking solar-powered gnome and watch me go, mate. You know what I mean? So Ghostbusters 1984 is a fucking pure... passion project, bud. Pure passion project. This was made with nothing but love and self-belief. The filmmaking process itself is an exact mirror of the message that this film carries, right?
Right.
For me...
How so?
Three scrappy underdogs, taking on the world, building a business from fuck all, for no other reason than to save their city. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's their little, we can do this. I believe in you. You believe in me. Fucking let's team up. Let's get going for it. Right.
Right.
The film process was that. So when they pitched this film.
Right.
Right. Ivan Reitman and Dan Aykroyd had written a treatment. Ivan Reitman sat down with the studio at Columbia Pictures and was like, I need money for this film. And they were like, yeah, sure. After about half an hour, they're like, yeah, how much money do you need then? And because they weren't expecting that question, Right. He just went in at a really high number and was like, 30 million.
Fucking hell.
And Columbia were like, all right, you can have 30 million if I can have this film by June 1984. And they said that in May 1983.
Fucking hell.
So they had 1 year, nothing but a treatment.
And change, yeah.
They had a treatment that Dan Aykroyd wrote. And they're
this whole meeting sounds like a pissing contest.
It was essentially
they're all basically trying to get a no out of the other one. Nobody wanted this film to be made, right? Aykroyd's written a treatment. Yeah. He's forced Reitman at gunpoint to pitch it to Columbia. Reitman does not want to make this fucking film. So he goes into the meeting, he goes, yeah, I'll make it for 30 mil. And the guy at Columbia's like, I don't want to make this fucking film. Right. Yeah, all right, mate. Yeah, all right. Great. Yeah. You got 1 year to make it. And everyone's just too much of a macho man to fucking back down.
That's a great fucking film right there.
I will make it for in a year.
Yeah.
Fucking watch me.
Yeah.
Easy, mate.
But yeah, so they went in with a high number, 30 million. They were given the 30 million immediately.
Jesus Christ.
With a 1 year deadline. From inception, they had to go away and write the script. This is how little they had of the film. So they had to go away and write the script. So they went to Martha's Vineyard into a basement and they sat there writing for 2 weeks solid whilst their families had a lovely holiday. Families were out at the beach. They were going for walks. Uh-huh. They were enjoying the scenery. You know, it was beautiful. Meanwhile...
Right. 1984.
1984.
Yeah. 1983.
1983.
1983, I suppose they were writing. Yeah, so they basically just bought like 8 grams of coke and just locked themselves in the basement. We're writing, don't worry about it.
But 2 weeks later, they come out with a script. Now, the original script was written with three Ghostbusters in mind. It was going to be Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, and John Belushi.
I mean, hang about. Let me just have a quick Google.
Yeah.
For John Belushi. Yeah.
Massively famous.
Well, he fucked that one up, didn't he?
Massively famous. I mean, he died. That's why he's not in it.
He fucked that one up by dying in 1982.
Yeah. So that was the original plan. It was originally going to be John Belushi, Eddie Murphy, and Dan Aykroyd. But obviously, John Belushi had passed away.
Yeah, yeah. They had to recast him as a ghost.
Such a good... Do you know what the worst thing is? Slimer was nicknamed Belushi's ghost in production.
Oh, he fucking wasn't.
Was his nickname.
No, he wasn't. Fucking hell.
But yeah, so obviously Eddie Murphy turned it down to do Beverly Hills Cop, which was the highest grossing film of 1984. Ghostbusters being the second. It beat Ghostbusters by, is it 30 or 40 mil? It wasn't a lot. They were both in like the 200 millions.
This is all fascinating and it is genuinely fascinating. Yeah. I am slightly stuck on the fact that Dan Aykroyd... Yeah. Genuinely believes ghosts are real.
Yes, he does.
He's in there with the ghostie, which he was.
Well, his great grandfather was part of a society, and he used to watch all of the touring acts of like mediums and spiritualists and all this stuff, and he would write whether they were real or fake.
So I'm Dan Aykroyd, and I think ghosts are real.
Yes,
and my friend John Belushi dies, and I've got no problem with the ghost of John Belushi.
Yeah.
Seeing a slimy, green, fat, glutton orb that's just a fat sack of shit with arms and just be like, yeah, Belushi's ghost.
You're talking about Slimer right now. And you need to watch your fucking mouth, all right? That guy's a treasure.
If you die, Ben, and I write a film shortly after your death, and I believe in ghosts, and I'm just like, right, there's this guy, and he's just made out of shit. And weakness, and I'm going to call it Ben. I can just imagine your ghost being like, "Oh,
if that was the case, obviously if I die first,
that's a bit hurtful.
If I die first, I'm obviously haunting you, right? And if you don't write a film that involves sort of like, let's say, the Slender Man, and you don't like during production, you don't nickname the Slender Man Ben, or the Bender Man,
Postman Twat.
No, it's a different film, isn't it?
The Bender Man is a different film.
Maybe don't call it that. If you don't nickname that Slender Man character Ben, I'm going to be fucking furious with you, and my hauntings are going to get poltergeisty. All right?
Okay. Aykroyd gets a pass for that one reason.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it seems a bit bitter.
Yeah.
Anyway, Beverly Hills Cop did pretty well.
Beverly Hills Cop did good. The original three Ghostbusters, Eddie Murphy, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd. John Belushi passed away. Eddie Murphy passed on the film. So, Belushi was then recast by Bill Murray.
Nice.
Harold Ramis just wanted to be a writer. He didn't want to be in the film, but after searching, they couldn't find anyone to play Egon Spengler that would suit it more than Harold Ramis. So he took
I can imagine in the writing process, like he a lot of it will be his dialogue, and they're like, "Well, you said this in the room perfectly. Why are we trying to find someone
yeah,
else?
Yeah, yeah, that's almost say it, exactly it.
To say it again in front of a camera.
Almost exactly like. It. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then obviously they recast Eddie Murphy with Ernie Hudson. Winston Zeddemore was supposed to be in the film from the get-go, like very early on, but with the rewrite, it meant that Winston now joined much later on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The special effects took a whole new studio being built specifically
Boss
to do
Studios.
It. Boss Studios specifically to do it. Every scene, every frame of the proton beam is animated by hand.
Fuck off. What?
It's insane. The amount of work that goes into this is insane. They had to do all of the ghosts are either animatronics or full sculptures that are full puppeteered.
There's one ghost that isn't, but I need to bring them up later for structural reasons.
Okay.
But yeah, the ghosts are very impressive.
Incredible.
The ridiculous thing is if you say this took a year to make, right, from like being given the money, and then they probably wasted a couple of weeks panicking. By the time they actually got started, it was probably the month of release 1 year prior, right?
Yeah.
If you asked me to write a script 12 months later, I might just be finishing the first draft that I was happy with.
It's fucking insane, isn't it?
And it wouldn't be anything close to this script, which is near perfect.
This is what I'm saying. So the script on this as well, most of it was ad-libbed. Most of Bill Murray's lines are ad-libbed.
Why do you hurt me?
Do you see what I mean? Like the amount of talent that is just floating around on screen, cracking shit jokes about ghosts.
How
do these people exist? And then how do these people find each other? And then how do these people turn 30 million in 1 year into the fucking Ghostbusters? It's infuriating and mesmerizing and inspiring all in one fucking vicious, disgusting cycle where I'm like, fuck you, but also thank you. But mainly, fuck you, but also thank
you. Fuck you, and I'll put the film on again tomorrow.
Fuck you, and I'm watching it next week as well. Fuck you, thank you. Do you know what I mean? It's insane.
So coming back to that ghost that's not practical or animatronic. Mm-hmm.
If you say John Belushi, I'm going to be fucking fuming.
No. It's a dark one, and I don't want to get too deep. And obviously, if you don't want to share this on the podcast, that's fine. But I've known you for a while, and I feel like I have a right to ask.
Okay.
Do you think ghosts swallow?
Okay, I know exactly which scene you're on about now.
Because that's a lady in an outfit who's on wires. But for those who don't remember, there is a scene in this film where Dr. Raymond Stantz, played by Dan Aykroyd, wakes up in the middle of the night to find himself getting noshed off by a ghost. And I want to know, do ghosts swallow? Because if they don't, would that explain ectoplasm? Because you can't just walk around for all eternity with a mouthful. You've got to drop it off somewhere.
It brings a different fucking sentiment to the whole. You know when Stan...
Venkman's got it on his hand.
In the library, yeah. But I'm more talking about in the hotel when Venkman gets full slimed in the face.
Oh my
and
God.
And Stantz is like,
did
Egon!
He get sexually assaulted?
Spengler! Egon! Venkman's down! He's been slimed! Fantastic. Save me some is the immediate response. It brings a different context to that line though.
Really does. Really does.
Well, thank you. And also fuck you.
I just feel like it's a can of worms they didn't have to open.
Yeah, of course it is, man. But also you opened it further.
Well, I like to get my crowbar in there because I feel like in the writing process somebody said okay, hear me out. This is just a joke, but like What if my character like woke up and was like getting noshed off by a ghost and everyone was like,
that's hilarious.
He's like, I'm just joking.
I'm just kidding.
And
like, but what about,
I'm just kidding.
I wouldn't get my full penis out. You know, just
like, obviously, like it'd just be a throwaway. Yeah. Like, you know, it's just, use it if you want.
The guys at Boss Studios have already said they have a prosthetic penis lying around and they have a machine that makes it look like enormous amounts of semen erupting from said penis. But I haven't done much research. It's just a joke.
Right. I feel like there was one person in that basement who was really fond of that bit and everyone else was like, would you just fucking drop
stop
it?
Trying to get your dick out. Aykroyd, calm it down. Not everyone needs to see your penis.
Right. It's so counter to the rest of the tone of the film.
That's what, dude, the whole fucking tone of this film is just goofy, 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 mm-hmm. fun. The practical effects are incredible. I keep coming back to the practical effects, but
they haven't aged. They haven't aged. Because there's a certain charm.
But they haven't at the same time. I know exactly what you mean. No, but they haven't
because we don't know what ghosts look like. And in my brain, I just go, ghosts look like that. Like, I know that the glow and the sort of semi-transparency and all that sort of stuff, I know why it's that.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course I know it's there because that for practical reasons. But because it's a fantastical element and it's done practically, so it's not a case of poor... The animation is of a quality that it makes the animatronics characters in their own right.
Yeah, yeah.
So the practical effects have aged, but they've aged so gracefully.
Yeah. It's
you know, they're the Helen Mirren of practical effects.
You know, when you get older... And you start thinking about like, oh, do you remember that game on Game Boy Advance? That just, it was just mesmerizing. It was so mate. Much fun. And then you play it again.
Silent Hill looked
dude,
mint.
Silent Hill was so scary that we turned the PlayStation off. And that is not a joke. Yep. That is literally when I was a kid, I turned Silent Hill off because it was too fucking scary. Yep.
I never got more than 25 minutes into Resident Evil.
This is what I'm saying. And you play it now and you're like, what in the fuck was I thinking about that? I was so underexposed to everything. I was scared of a dog.
That is not a scary rectangle. Yeah,
it's a dog with a bit of ham on its face. Like, why am I panicking? What is this? It's that, right? And it's going, oh God, do you remember that game? And then you play it as a 35-year-old and you're like, this is fucking shocking. This is awful. And it destroys your childhood memories of it. It just ruins it, sours it.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostbusters never does that.
It really doesn't.
It never does that. You watch it and you just get the immediate same warm feelings that you did as a kid when you first saw it.
It's got like a universal appeal.
It really fucking does,
it,
man.
It like, there is no person on the planet who can watch Ghostbusters and go, it's not for
but
me.
This is the impact that it's had on cinema. This is, again, this is where our worlds cross, right? My goofy 80s comedy movie, the impact that it has had on cinema, like you've just said, universally appealing to adults and children alike. There is no one on this... I fucking, as an experiment at work the other day, I put on the Ghostbusters theme tune.
Oh.
And there's a couple people there that I work with that are a lot younger than me. They've never seen Ghostbusters. They don't care about it at all. I was really excited about Frozen Empire. I was like, today's new Ghostbusters day. Is everyone going to go watch it? And they were like, what? I was like, what the fuck do you mean, what? It's Ghostbusters. It's Ghostbusters day! And no one cared. But I put the theme tune on and... Yeah. In the very beginning, I was like, what song is this? And every single one of them, Ghostbusters. I was like, of course it fucking is. Everyone knows this shit. But why? It's insane. It's like it's programmed into us on a biological level now.
Yeah.
But I think it appeals to everyone because it's not too scary.
Yeah.
It's not too goofy.
No.
But it's this incredibly well-written layered comedy, right? That on the surface is very dry and goofy and like fun.
Yeah.
But then as you look into it, it can get sort of like real fucking dark real quick. But it also gets really complex and ties in with itself and really adult humor sprinkled with like the thin layer of this is family friendly.
Kind of, and it isn't family friendly. I mean, Venkman is quite disturbing at times.
It's quite disturbing at
times.
There's
a bit where he just asks an old lady, are you menstruating right now?
You know that you're Venkman in this, right?
And then when someone challenges...
Out of me and you, you're Venkman.
Yeah, I know. He's an absolute icon.
Yeah,
100%. Okay, cool. I don't have to like a mirror, Ben, all right?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Dude, I'm in the same boat with you, man.
The theme song, I've got my fun fact that I always had in Music Land about the Ghostbusters theme song is that Ray Parker Jr. got sued.
What for?
By Huey Lewis.
Okay.
Huey Lewis said that it was a ripoff of one of his songs.
And was it?
Well, it was ruled that Huey Lewis was going to receive royalties from the Ghostbusters theme song, from Ray Parker Jr.'s cut.
Wow.
Now, the reason for that is they gave Ray Parker Jr. a week, and they gave him the Huey Lewis track that they've been editing to.
Right.
And they said, we want something like this, right? So it's not that he maliciously copied it. It was like, oh, they'll never know. Right. I'll just sneak this through. It's that he was instructed that they wanted something that sounded very much like this because this was kind of perfect, but they couldn't afford it. So he did, as he was hired to do.
He did a good job, he made essentially.
He did a good job, right?
And then got sued for doing a good job.
Well,
fucking hell.
Huey Lewis then took him to court, and the agreement was that Huey Lewis would take a chunk of the royalties, but there was a non-disclosure agreement on the court case where no one could talk about it. Except Huey Lewis couldn't keep his fucking mouth shut and spoke about it on VH1, which meant all the case got thrown out.
Oh, God, that's fucking amazing. Fuck that guy. I mean, I love Huey Lewis, but also...
Yeah.
Idiot.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Thank you, but fuck you.
Yeah. But then, obviously, the film is also... I think its everlasting effect on cinema will forever be... It's a few friends getting together, working against all odds to bring a dream to life and share it with the world. And fuck me, mate, if that doesn't sound like everything that we've ever done in our entire fucking lives, including this podcast, what is?
I don't know. I didn't have you pegged as such a right winger.
How the fuck is this right wing?
Ben, I hate to destroy your... I mean, I say I hate to, but it's my favourite fucking thing. It's my, I love it, right? But I'm going to take your little comfort blanket and I'm just going to put it on the fire of truth and reason. You've got three men with little to no qualifications or training.
They're
with
all
the exception of
doctors,
Egon Spengler.
They all have PhDs, but continue.
Yeah, okay. Venkman got his by fucking sexual assault. There's no question
about
that.
Has he got
that.
A bit of paper that says, I'm a doctor on it? Yes, he does.
Right, fine.
Again, Spengler, you're Venkman fair enough. By the way. Just
yeah, okay. I'm aware. Cool. I'm aware. So I've Zuckerberged my genius mate into doing a podcast with me.
Right.
You're great at this stuff, and I'm just there going, and me. Right, so
I fucking hate this.
They start a business based on just crippling debt, unsecured loans, no public money whatsoever. It's all privately funded. Yeah. And start an unregulated service using particle physics and huge amounts of like atomic risk.
Yes.
And the main antagonist of the film is the government for trying to squash the little guy.
Right.
It's a libertarian wet dream.
All I'm hearing is your summation of Oppenheimer right now.
Oppenheimer was doing it for the government and the public good. These guys are doing it for their own bank.
Nah,
banks.
They're doing it for the public good, but they're just doing it without the government. That's not right wing. That's libertarian. I'll say that. That's self-starting.
I'm just saying, if this wasn't set in New York and it was set in Texas, the film would end with the government flame-throwing them out of their little fucking bunker.
But hear me out. When you say right wing, I immediately go to like Confederate flags in the firehouse. There's like, Zeddemore's not in the film anymore. You know what I mean?
No, I meant economically.
You need to
like,
be clearer. You can't just fucking drop that it's a right-wing film and then go, yeah, that seems fine. No, it fucking doesn't. I'll agree that it's libertarian. Yeah, scrappy underdogs, underdog story of the ages. 100%.
You can't tell me what to do, government.
1,000%.
Who cares if this...
Dude, Dickless is like the fucking worst fucking person on the planet. The EPA in this, they've seen ghosts attacking the city.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen a fucking giant marshmallow man. And he's still like, nah, you're shysters. It's like, well, they're not though, are they?
Right. No. What Dickless does in this film and goes, you have extraordinary claims. Mm-hmm. I would like you to present your extraordinary evidence. And Venkman goes, how about go fuck yourself? And he goes... That's not how society works, Venkman. And Venkman goes, I think I know better than society. Sign up to my 30-day trial of my alpha male course.
Shut the fuck up. I knew it was going to take
the cellist of your dreams.
I knew it was going to take a tape turn. Like, I fucking knew it. Like, even bringing this series to the table, I was thinking about this. And I was like, before I even spoke to you about bringing it to the table, I was like, he's going to work a fucking take joke into this somewhere. And fuck you, buddy.
Yeah, mate.
That's all I'm going to say.
He's your nemesis.
Hey?
I prefer. He's your nemesis.
How dare he? I am king of the beta. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Look at my spindly arms raw. You know what I mean?
That's why you're like diametric opposites, you know? It's like Professor X and...
Stairs.
We both got the same...
Oh, that's why it works.
We're bad people. Bad people.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. And yeah, also that is quite bad. Anyway, so the impact on cinema. Why does Ghostbusters remain a pinnacle of pop culture 4 decades later? Why is it still a relevant benchmark of comedy 4 decades after its release?
Okay. I mean, I think that there's something that this film did that's very, very difficult to do.
Okay.
I'm sure there are exceptions out there and I'm sure I'm just poorly informed, but from my perception, I think it was the first film to do this.
Hey, man, look, we're learning. If it's not the first film, let us know in the comments. Get in touch with us on through the website. Get in touch with us via email. Let us know.
So I feel like, for me at least, there's an unspoken rule that the more money you spend, the less funny a film gets.
I'll agree with that, you know.
I don't watch comedies featuring The Rock and go, fuck me, that just really got my, that really got in between my ribs and dude, found my funny bone.
Jumanji, you know? Tickled the tits off me.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
No one said that.
It's funny enough. It's right, fine. To count as a comedy.
It's fine. Right? But yeah. There's a chuckle in there somewhere. Yeah, technically, it's a comedy.
Right. All of my favorite comedies run with smaller budgets. And the bigger the budget, the less funny it is. But Ghostbusters is the diametric opposite of that. It is the stairs to the Professor X of comedy.
Yes.
It is...
I'm not sure we should keep bringing this one up. We might have to let that one die, buddy.
All right, well, Jean Grey, that one.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think...
It's Professor X down the stairs, that one. You know what I mean?
Christopher Reeve in a house fire.
Jesus Christ! That's worse!
I think it was a huge budget, incredible effects for the time. You know, I can't imagine... I can't imagine James Cameron bringing out Avatar, mm-hmm. and it's as hilarious as this.
Could you imagine, though? Like, I want that film so
impact,
bad.
That's the impact Ghostbusters would have had. That's Ghostbusters.
Show us the Avatar blooper reel. You know what I mean? Show us a Na'vi tripping up over a camera wire. Show me that.
If I could remember the name of the protagonist in Avatar, I'd link it back to the Professor X joke, but I can't.
Yeah, you can't. It's fine. I just call him Scarface. Fuck it.
That's the antagonist.
Either or. They both got Either scars. Or.
They're not designed to be memorable. That's the whole point of those movies. There,
Jake
they're...
Sully.
Jake Sully. Jake yeah, it's Sully like Jake Sully and stairs.
Fuck's sake.
I think to answer your question, it was the first successful blend of a really high budget, incredible looking production design.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly brave thing.
Yeah.
To build a film with that looks this good and spend it on a joke. Do you know what I mean? It's a 30 million quid joke.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's almost like they just, you know, they started with nothing. They managed to get themselves some funding.
Yeah.
They built something from nothing in a very short amount of time without any outside help.
Yeah.
And just threw this at the cinema screens with nothing but love and affection. Doesn't that sound familiar? Sound familiar?
It does. Yeah. You are right. You're totally right. Like, I've got nothing against this film.
It's incredible.
I can be a dick about it, but it's an incredible film.
Look, it doesn't matter whether you like Ghostbusters, whether you love Ghostbusters, or whether you fucking hate Ghostbusters.
No one hates Ghostbusters.
I've met a couple people. Once. What? I've met them once, and I've never spoken to them again.
Right, okay. Where were they? North Korea?
No, just random people out and about. They said they really didn't like Ghostbusters. I've never spoken to them ever again. Because I was like, no, that's not a person. That might be a T-1000. You know what I mean? But whether you like it, love it, hate it, or loathe it, you can't
they were ghosts.
Fucking help. they might have been ghosts. I don't know what ghosts look like.
It's not
that
they don't like the films. Yeah. It's not that they don't like the physical people, Ghostbusters.
No. That's it. Maybe it was Patrick Swayze from the film Ghost. Can you imagine if there was a crossover between Ghost and Ghostbusters where Patrick Swayze is doing like the pottery class thing with his wife and Venkman slides into a DMs and just starts plowing on a couch while Swayze carries on making a clay pot, just weeping his ghost tears.
Yeah, Swayze would back into the closet, let's be fair.
Nobody puts Swayze in the corner, all right? Nobody.
Normally we
can't do anything but fucking respect this film. You can't do anything. I mean, the fucking special effects were so rushed that tons of shit was left in the film that shouldn't have been. Visible wires, incomplete special effects left, right, and center. Do you know what Ivan Reitman said about this? It's surprising, but no one really seemed to care. It's literally what he said. How great is that?
I feel like I was going to make a very unfortunate sexual reference there, but I feel like certain things are really good and you're not just going to go, oh, that's a bit unfortunate. You know, there's bigger things going on. If Ghostbusters is on the screen, you don't worry about the pube at the back of your throat. You just go, what a great movie.
I don't know how to feel about any of these. any of these that's coming on right now. But I tell you what I am glad about, Rob. I'm glad that we've started our journey to figure out why the Ghostbusters 1984 is still as relevant today as it was in 1984. Mm-hmm. It's still as groundbreaking today as it was in 1984. And we're going to carry on this series and we're going to keep investigating this like the fucking detectives that we are, purely because, fuck it, what else are we going to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also I like the run up. You know, when you've got a classic movie, I like the run up to it, you know? So it's good that we're going into the back catalogue to see what inspired Ghostbusters 2016 and figure out why it is possibly the perfect film. I've got so much to say about Answer the Call it's about 50-50. I've got a lot of positive things to say about Answer the Call. It's going to surprise you.
I'm going to surprise you as well. I've got a shitload of positive stuff to say about the film. I have one negative thing to say about that film.
Right, okay.
And it'll be my first
point. Well, don't say it now.
I'm not going to say it now. Fucking tune in what, 6 weeks? But what I'm saying is it's going to be my first point and you're going to go, oh. And then that's going to be it. That's going to be it. The rest of the film's going to be like a laugh and a giggle.
I think your positive point is going to go, it's only 1 hour and 56 minutes.
All right, I've got two positive points. But no, I'm glad we're on this journey. We're going to be picking up with Ghostbusters 2, the sequel to this fucking almost near perfect comedy movie. We're going to be picking it up with Ghostbusters 2. See how the sequel does.
This is normally the part of the episode where I ask if you'd like to play a game. We've just paused games for a little bit until the YouTube numbers get to
it.
Where we want
them
to
YouTube,
be.
Mate.
You know, it's on YouTube.
So go watch that.
Go to YouTube because we keep looking at the YouTube numbers and they are not the podcast numbers. So
yeah, fuckers.
At least 2/3 of you. Like, we spend as much time on the YouTube as we do on this in terms of effort and expenditure. And there's three of us on the YouTube because we've got Anthony who does all of our editing.
Anthony
who's legitimately
spends
the funniest part of the podcast.
Yeah, dude, it's wildly upsetting that our editor is the funniest person that exists within the Every Movie Ever franchise. You know what I mean? Like, that guy's fucking hilarious.
Yes,
and
it's
for
annoying.
Those who haven't seen it, you'd know what we're on about if you just head over to our YouTube channel right now, like and subscribe, and then watch a few of the videos that Anthony has edited because he is a fucking master.
Yes, he is. So instead, I'm going to ask you straight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I need to ask you this because everyone knows the answer.
Oh yeah, straight
but
away.
Ben,
fat 10.
What do you rate Ghostbusters?
Fat 10.
1984. Fat 10.
Fat 10. Straight away. Fat 10. Doesn't get better for me. This is it. This is the one.
I like it. I don't love it. So I'm going to say 9.
Okay,
but I don't know what the one it loses is.
Dude, to be honest, I was expecting you to be like 6 or 7, and I would have been happy
with
that.
Well, like you did with one of my favourite films last week, where you were just lovely about it all episode, and at the end you're like, 6.
Okay.
It's masterful. It's a classic. It's incredible. I can't believe how much I love this film. 6.
Do you want to know why, though? let me clear this up, right? I went in with no expectations. Like, I was expecting a 1, like a soft 1.
Okay,
like
fine.
Flaccid 1 is what I was expecting. And what I got, I was like, holy shit, this is good. It's not my cup of tea in the slightest.
Yeah.
But I was fucking blown away by it.
Okay, nice.
And to be blown away by something that's not my cup of tea, I was like, that's a fucking solid 6. Did I say 6 or did I say 7?
You said 6. Yeah. Seems harsh now, doesn't it, in the cold light?
A little bit. A little bit. I was having a rough week.
But I'm gonna go 9 on Ghostbusters. I'm gonna go 9 on Ghostbusters.
That's more than I thought, man.
I really like this film. Look, I always judge every film by what did it set out to do and how well did it achieve it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
What did this film not achieve that it set out to do?
Nothing. It did everything almost perfectly.
It would be a fat 10, but I've got to save the point for Answer the Call. So, in the meantime, I'm going to tell you that's all the time we have for this week.
We love and appreciate each and every one of you from the bottom of our hearts. I would say this more excitedly, but you keep bringing up fucking Answer the Call like it's a fat 10 and it's very upsetting. And when I say upsetting, I mean rage inducing, and I'm trying to hold my cool whilst we're still recording.
But Go on. Comment corner,
man. Fuck. Go on.
Yeah.
Have you got
ridiculous.
One?
We've actually got one. Yes. So I murdered a listener's name.
You did.
Last week.
And now it's a ghost.
Now it's a ghost.
See? Thematic.
thematic indeed. But they got in touch and they said, you did mess up my name, but that's okay. It's not an easy one for English speakers with the diphthong A-O and the A's got a squiggle over it. The closest pronunciation would be Jew-Aun. The A-O is close to the Aun in pound.
Okay.
But regarding the podcast, and I'll try to keep it short, it's interesting that the image Ben had of Chaplin was that what that most people who haven't watched any of his films probably still have.
Yeah.
So he was a comedic genius, we all know it, but he was a great artist overall.
Is he talking about me or Chaplin?
Chaplin, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Oh, right.
With a profound knowledge of everything related to cinema, and his films are so much more than comedies.
They really are.
Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd were probably on par, if not ahead of Chaplin at the time.
Wow.
When it comes to slapstick.
Okay.
But incomparable to Chaplin and his legacy, because so many directors drank directly or indirectly from Chaplin. So De Sica, Tati, Wenders, Kitano, Jarmusch, Sacha Baron Cohen, to name but a few. And this film was, in one way or another, copied or served as the blueprint for many other works.
Nice. Fucking hell, man. That's like...
Yeah.
In depth. He's, good shit, bud.
He's, you know, he's, his films are engaging and well-executed. We forget these were still the early days of cinemas. Production is incredible. He built a few blocks of late 19th century London in Hollywood for his films.
Okay.
His fucking kids enjoy it. Notice how he always chose the right shot for each scene, the close-ups for the drama, the wider shot for laughs. Just a master of everything. Production, directing, acting, composing. There's so much more I'd like to say about the film and Chaplin, but I'll save some for a future talk or the next rounds of the trilogy you choose. I told you we had listeners who like Chaplin.
Mate, fucking eat fair shit. Play, man. I'll fucking nom-nom it, you know what I mean? Feed it. In comes the aeroplane, man. Fucking nom-nom. It's good. That's good shit. That's good shit. Joao, fucking thanks for the input, man. I've gone a similar route. I also have a very deep and a very insightful comment from a reel on YouTube, one of our YouTube shorts.
Is this going to be some fucking... It's going to be slander, isn't it?
No, no, no. It's a comment on Chaplin again from one of our Chaplin reels.
Oh, okay.
And what it says is it's from Giuseppe Pepe Saval. And he says, that guy with the bead little eyes looks like Dracula. So... I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he means you because my eyes are enormous anime eyes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember that one because I replied. I was like, thank you. I'm very, very proud of my little tiny little crab eyes. And it's nice that someone's finally noticed. This is why I need to lose weight, man. I need to get off the Miss Molly's chocolate.
Your eye size
off the rice crackers.
Isn't the weight isn't the eye size problem, man. It's not like... It's not like if Anya Taylor-Joy gained weight, her eyes would get closer together and smaller. Do you know what I mean?
No, she's got a different eye shape. I just get excessively fat eyelids.
Shut the fuck... I don't know how to respond to this in a way that isn't just being mean to you at this point.
I could eat myself Asian. I'm
pretty
sure.
Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. You sound like Dracula.
I do have an evil villain laugh at times. That is all the time we have for this week.
We love and appreciate each and every one of you. Truly.
We do indeed.
Truly.
That was Comic Corner. If you want to be involved, you know how to do it. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Discord. We're in your fax machine.
We live there.
We do live in your fax machine. If you've got one.
Yeah.
Who has a fax machine? Well, we're there anyway.
I have a fax machine.
And I'm just going to cosplay as society and tell you to do what society always does, which is just buy shit and numb yourself with mindless commercialism, whereas Ben is going to wrap up the thoughts and themes of this week's movie to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week, by giving a little motivational pep talk.
Yeah, I got you.
Consume.
Just like the Ghostbusters, man, when the world is against you, when everything is coming up shit, everything looks bleak as fuck, and you're like, what do I do now? What's my next step? Surround yourself with the people. Find your people that are going to be there, pick you up, dust you off, and just fucking help you follow your dream. Because that shit is invaluable. I've got this tomato-faced, beady-eyed, Dracula-looking bastard who's helping me do mine, you know what I mean? I think the most important lesson is...
There is only Zool.